You're listening to New Churches Podcast, a production of Send Network on newchurches.com. We discuss all things church planting. If you're looking to take your next step toward multiplication, you're in the right place. newchurches.com provides relevant and reliable resources for church planters, church multipliers, and disciple makers. Our growing library features pastors, planters, and church leaders like Ed Stetzer, David Platt, Matt Chandler, Trillia Newbell, Christine Hoover, Dahati Lewis, Trevin Wax, and many others.
Hey, welcome to the New Churches Podcast. My name is Clint Clifton, and today I've got two really good friends with me. This is Todd Adkins and Jamie LaMotto. Hey, guys, how are you?
What's up? What's up?
Well, first, let me introduce the two of you to our audience. Jamie is the lead pastor of Mosaic Church in Winchester, Virginia, and he's a regional equipper also for the North American Mission Board. Jamie's passionate about multiplication, and he's passionate about seeing leaders raise up to plant new churches everywhere for everyone. He and his wife, Jessica, have been married for 20 years. I've known them most of that time, and they've got four children together, and they're an incredible family. And Todd is the director of leadership at Lifeway Christian Resources. Prior to Lifeway, Todd served as the executive pastor at McLean Bible Church in Northern Virginia, and he's passionate about helping churches build armies, not just audiences. So today we want to talk about this subject, build in the beginning what you want in the end. And this is a very relevant subject for church planters. It's probably relevant for anyone in pastoral ministry, especially somebody starting out in a church that's new to them. But it's the simple idea that the things that we want to be true of our church in maturity, as the church gets larger and has more resources and more people, the things we want to be true about the church in the end, we want to put nuggets of those things in the church in the beginning. Because there's a popular idea, I don't know if you guys have noticed this in pastoral work, but there's a popular idea that we'll hold off on some of the most important things until the church is sort of quote unquote ready for that. And I found that it is a really detrimental idea. It's an idea that is a bit like chasing a carrot. You never quite apprehend it. So Jamie, let's start off with you. How should a church planter be thinking about his end goals as he prepares to gather people together?
Yeah. As I think about this, you know, the thing that immediately comes to mind is that statement that we probably heard all the time, build in the beginning what you want in the end. Mm-hmm. And I think to some degree that that's helpful, but I found what James Clear says in Atomic Habits to be a little bit more helpful, which he says Rome wasn't built in a day, but they were laying bricks every hour. And so this idea of systems are greater than our goals to some degree and habits over outcomes. So for a new church planter, I would just encourage them to think, are the systems that you're building today going to help lead you to where you want to go tomorrow?
Yeah.
And where you want to go in the end? Because ultimately, you got to lay bricks every hour to build the city that you're trying to build. So,
yeah. And in some ways, this is kind of what you're indicating, but the daily activities or the regular rhythms of what you do day to day as in pastoral work are going to affect the outcome a lot more than even like your talking points or your big initiatives, those things you do every single day. I'm always telling church planters that from a leadership development standpoint, if you wake up every day and think about how to multiply your church, you'll probably, you know, do some things in the day-to-day life of your ministry that you wouldn't do if you were waking up every day thinking about growing your church. It's just a different set of habits that result in two different outcomes.
So goals are massively important. I mean, when you look at a launch strategy, hopefully your purpose is really clear, because what you're really doing early on is you're not just launching a church, you're launching a culture. Because culture is shared behavior and the church is made up of people and people are your carriers of culture. So you get one shot to do this well. And you do want to begin with the end in mind, that vision of where you're going, what you want to be, your mission, your values, all of those things. So it's vitally important to have the right goals and have your vision as clear as possible so that you can decide what to say yes to and what to say no to. Probably the most important thing that you will do in launching is what you say yes and what you say no to, especially if you're semi-successful in your launch. Because if you're semi-successful in your launch, then there's going to be all kinds of people that want to do all kinds of things and hijack the mission and vision of your church plant because, hey, the inertia of success is a really big pull. And, you know, ideas will be rampant. Great ideas will be rampant, but they may not fit with ultimately where you're going and what you want to do. So your job right now is to cultivate the culture that you want tomorrow. And that will be a big part of that will be setting those goals and even underneath of those goals, making sure that you have the right things in place. So lead measures, lag measures are important. I think we've already talked about those before. You know, a lag measure would be, oh, well, we want to grow by X percent. You know, we want to grow or we want to launch, you know, a church by year three or whatever crazy thing that you kind of set out there. Well, what's more important than that is to say, okay, well, what are the two or three things that we know if we accomplish those things, we are going to ultimately get to our goal? Because so many times we'll set lofty goals out there and then, you know, that's it. We don't give people a strategy. We don't give them paths to run on in order to reach that goal. So that's why those things are key.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So sometimes in a new church, there's really not a lot going for the new church in terms of recruiting power. You know, you don't have maybe money to hire team members. You don't have a lot of momentum with the work. Really, all you have is the vision that you can cast for what this thing's going to become. You have equity to offer of this organization that doesn't yet exist, and that equity is not very valuable at the time, but hopefully in the future it will be valuable. But all of the power that you have in recruiting is wound up in your ability to clearly articulate to people you're trying to recruit what this new work is going to look like, what it's going to be like. And if people find that to be viable, they're likely to jump in. If they don't find you to be credible and they don't think you can do it, they're probably not likely to jump in. But I'm curious, Todd, from a leadership standpoint, how goals themselves can be recruiting tools.
I mean, the way to make it as compelling as possible is to make it as clear as possible. In this stage of the game, you know, that clear and compelling vision is your currency because you don't have anything, you don't have any money to offer at this point. Even if you're well healed as a planter for some reason, you still can't buy your way to the church you want. You want to build your way to the church you want. And so this is where you go. I mean, the higher level of competency and capacity leaders that you are trying to recruit, the more important clarity is, because they are going to dig down into the layers of what you just said, not just take your word for face value on we're going to launch, you know, we're going to launch a church in 3 years. I don't know why I said that, but we're going to go with it. They're going to want to know how you plan on doing that. What things are you going to put into place? They're going to ask more questions. And the best thing to do is answer their question before they ask it so that they know, oh, this person is well thought out. They know where they're going. And this sounds really compelling. I know what my next step is or what our first steps are because they've outlined it so well. There's not a hanging question mark there. There's not a lack of confidence or comfort because the planter wasn't clear. There's enough lack of confidence. There's enough lack of those things, even if the planter is clear. So don't sacrifice shrinking that delta as much as possible by being clear.
Yeah. No, that's so good, Todd. As you think about that idea of recruiting versus reproduction, I love what you're saying about that, because if we build in the beginning a culture of simply recruiting, the responsibility always lies with the person in charge versus an idea. Reproduction says, you know what, I'm decentralizing this and I'm creating opportunities for other people to take ownership. And I think so often I've seen churches get 6, 7, 8, 20 years down the road, and the burden of responsibility still rests with the person at the top of the organization completely. And they could have decentralized some of that by producing a culture of reproduction and saying, hey, we all are responsible in this. Certainly the leader at the top is, you know, responsible for casting vision and keeping us on course and all of that. But ultimately, creating more spaces on the net for people to take ownership is going to help lead to long-term success.
Jamie, me and you were both pretty young when we planted. How old were you when you planted?
28.
Yeah. I was 24 when I planted. And one of the things that is so challenging about leadership, particularly in a church plant with a young leader that's inexperienced in a lot of ways, is that you can misunderstand how challenging it is to change a trajectory that you set into motion. Mm-hmm. You know, so I found that, you know, I as a 24-year-old, I set some things into motion that then as a 27-year-old, 28-year-old, I really didn't like, and I wanted to change. And I was running into the same problems that my pastor buddy from seminary was running into at his 300-year-old church, trying to change things that just weren't changeable. And I set these things into motion. I kept wanting to say to people, hey, no, this was my idea in the first place. It's okay. I can change it because I came up with the idea in the first place, and mm-hmm. nobody really cared because it felt like their ideas at the moment, you know? So it can be challenging to change trajectories. And sometimes young leaders don't realize that. They don't realize, they think that because they started the church, they'll always have their hand on the controls of what can change and how it changes and how quickly it changes. And that's just not true. It's going to become really difficult. So the reason I bring that up is because building in the beginning what you want in the end is not just a function of like wisdom. It's actually very practical, because if I don't build, like for the church I planted, it was most important to me that our church be committed to multiplication, to developing new church planting leaders, to multiplying churches. I wanted to start a new church every year. If that's really important to us, then we had to do that in year one, because it would be nearly impossible to have church for 5, 6, 7, 8 years, and then all of a sudden say, okay, now we're going to hive off this big portion of our energy and attention. It's another thing to set it off as a really small portion of what we do and have it grow with the church as the church grows.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah. And I think about my own church planting experience, having been greatly influenced by you, being sent out from the church that you helped to start. You know, we set out to be a mother church, not a mega church. Nothing wrong with being a mega church, but we wanted to be a church that was always looking at raising up people to send them out. And so even in the 10 years of planting a collegiate church, we were able to send out two different groups of people to start churches and congregations. And so, you know, I just think that's the idea of building into the beginning what you want in the end. And it takes intentionality to follow through with that.
I would say for us, we actually failed at some of those things, but mm-hmm. we failed at the right things. We failed at the things that we were trying to be successful at ultimately, and we got up again and kept trying. And I think that was a key component to, you know, we were not successful in all of our church plants, especially our early church plants. Mm-hmm. And that made that inertia, as you called it, you know, of us falling and getting back up, it seemed to further solidify a commitment to multiplication to the people who mm-hmm. were observing and part of it.
There's a couple of things at play. One, you're setting the appetite for what affinity groups and extracurricular activities, events, et cetera, that will happen. The more that you allow to happen, the more you say yes to, the more you're diluting your vision and mission and everything else down the road. So everything has an opportunity cost. Anything you say yes to is not just yes, a one-time yes, and we'll see how it goes. That's not what's happening here. You're setting a precedent. And that precedent carried forward can grow out of control. It's like, you know, kudzu. You think, oh, that actually looks pretty good there. And then, you know, you come back in 2 years and the whole road is covered in kudzu on both sides of the road. And you're like, how did we get here? Well, if we reverse engineer it, we said yes to too much too early. Again, that's the with that whole idea of inertia of success, as soon as you're successful, as soon as you have any margin, people are going to want to take advantage of that or launch their pet project or whatever. We just have to be, we have to be vigilant about saying no to a lot of different things. The other thing that that does is it helps create and cultivate the culture that you want. What you say no to and what you say yes to is the most powerful thing you have early on in setting culture. It's not what you preach. That's important, but people are going to see what you do more than hear what you say. So you need to make sure that what we do as a church is very much in alignment with what we say and where we want to go. We can't just say, hey, this is where we want to go and say that's where we want to go. That whole idea of poetry and plumbing comes into play again. It's great to cast a compelling vision, but you have to deliver on the dream. And it's a lot easier to deliver on the dream if you're very, very clear and you say no to anything that does not conform with where you want to go.
Well, I love what you're saying, Todd, too, because it's like this idea of celebrating is really, really important. Ensuring as you're building what you're trying to see the outcome be in the end, making sure the things that you're celebrated are tied to your values, not just simply surface success. You know, there are guys that have been moderately successful at church planting, like right out the gate, and they celebrate that, and it's not necessarily tied to their values. And so it becomes like a flash in the pan. And then they wonder why, you know, in the end, they weren't able to capitalize on that. And it could be tied to the fact that they simply celebrated the wrong thing rather than tying it to their core values.
Yeah. Yeah, Jamie, I know. I mean, that's been one of the things that one of the areas where you shine is helping people and even yourself thinking through some of those values and traits in the beginning. You know, if you were starting a church again right now, you know, or I know you're just kind of in the beginning of a ministry where you're stepping into a ministry that's already begun. Mm-hmm. What are some of the things you're thinking about early on in terms of the way you communicate values and whatnot that you hope will produce a certain type of result in the end? Can you think of anything specific?
Yeah, I can think of several things specifically related to core values. I think, and building in the beginning, I think it's making sure your values are shaped around who you actually are, not who you wish you were. This is where it's like, I always say the number one rule of leadership is know yourself. I think know yourself, know your team, and not always be looking over the shoulder of the pastor or ministry or organization that you respect the most, but really getting to know who you are and who it is that God has called you to be, and making sure that your values are shaped around who you are, not who you wish you were. And then making sure that your values fit your culture. So I think of it this way. Values are kind of like pants. So you could go to the store and just buy any pair of pants, or you could actually get fitted for these. And and over time, like whatever activity you're wearing those pants for, they're going to fit appropriately. And so I think really saying, does this not only fit me, but does this fit where God's placed me? Does it fit the city, the town, the place where I am? You know, I think about, you know, where I'm at now in the church that I'm pastoring in Winchester. You know, this was an existing church, 10 years old, and there are things that I can move around and shape, but there are things that are set because this is Winchester. And so I got to make sure that it fits. And then I want to make sure that they're rewarded and celebrated. So we've already talked about that, but I want to make sure that our values are actually celebrated, not necessarily the outcomes. Outcomes are great, but I want to make sure when I see people living out those values that we highlight that, we talk about that. And so those are the things that I want to come back to over and over, and to the point where when people are like, man, why do you keep talking about that? Then I've just got started on saying it enough. And for the new church planter, the new leader of a new organization, it's like, now's the time to lay brick, lay road, and just keep saying it over and over and over and celebrating it, and finding new creative ways to make sure that they're clear.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the power of story is really compelling. Whether it's a story of something that has already happened somewhere else, or a story of someone that, you know, they've come into contact with in the community, and reaching that person, or it's a story that this is our golden tomorrow. This is where we want to be. Let me paint the picture for you. And let me tell you that story. And, you know, doing that in an authentic way, I think is really important. But again, it's tying it back to a specific value. It's not enough to say people matter to God and us, and this is the verse, and it's where, you know, it's in Luke where he leaves the 99 and goes after the one. Like, that's good, but you've got to go beyond that. You've got to go a lot deeper. So I do think that the stories that you tell before and immediately after launch, you need to find things that you can bring out and bury down, you know, plant those seeds. The way that you plant those seeds is, again, by celebrating those things that you want to bring into the culture and weeding out the other things that aren't in alignment so that those things can grow. It's great if you buried that seed. If that seed is competing with a bunch of weeds, they're toast. They're toast because the weeds have already taken root and they're already choking out. You know, it doesn't even sprout. Like, you have to get rid of all those weeds before it even has a chance to sprout because no light's hitting the ground.
Jamie, I can think of one example from the planting a pillar of the church I planted that mm-hmm. really I think of most specifically when this situation comes up, when we talk about this topic. I think about the fact that in our first meetings before our church even was, you know, a church, I remember saying to our core team, we're gathered in a basement of somebody's home, that I don't ever want there to be a moment. I don't ever want to be there to be a collection or an offering that happens in our church, that a certain percentage of that offering doesn't go to start other new churches. I want mm-hmm. every dollar that ever comes into the church to have a portion of it represented for the spreading the gospel and planting of churches. And that laying that down in the beginning and then sort of carrying that out all the way through has meant there's always been a margin of resources in our budget for church multiplication. Now, growing that margin is not as challenging as putting it there in the first place. You can imagine mm-hmm. if the church is like cash strapped and I come and say, okay, guys, we need to start planting churches now. We need to put some money in the budget for church planting. It's going to be really a challenging mm-hmm. sell. But because it was always part of the equation, because we built it in the beginning, it was easy to expand it. Now that's tens, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars that we dedicate to church planting right. each year. And I think it has a lot to do with those early days when we said, we're going to do it like this, you know?
So. No, that's really good, Clint. What I hear you saying is you were like planting seeds at the beginning for generosity towards church planting. So that's a core value that you have, was generosity and time and investment towards the planting of new churches. And so I think there might be listeners who are listening to the podcast and they're like, man, that particular concept stands out to me as yeah. I think about building in the beginning what I want in the end. And I would just say, how could you plant some small seeds for that particular thing by emphasizing it, by talking about it, by celebrating it, by setting aside a certain amount. I mean, when I came to Mosaic, same thing. They were giving maybe through the cooperative program or, you know, through a church planting group, but there wasn't necessarily ownership towards specific investment in church planting. And so we just said, we're going to do this. And we set a dollar amount And it was a stretch for us. But as we've come, you know, a full year in, there's $6,000 that has been given specifically to church planting. So whether your church is 5 years old, 10 years old, 20 years old, or 1 year old, planting those seeds immediately and just waiting to see them grow, watering them by celebrating and talking and telling the stories about it.
Yeah. Yeah. And don't despite the day of small things, because when things are small, I mean, that's the scriptural principle, right? You know, faithful with a little, but you'll be faithful with much. And so I think it's a great story later on to be able to say, yeah, we were dedicating, we were dedicating 10% or 15% to our church plant when our 10 or 15% was almost nothing, you know, it was enough to buy a pizza or whatever. So, all right, guys. Well, thank you so much for spending time with me talking about the subject today.
We believe every church must be equipped to respond well in the initial stages of learning about instances of sexual, physical, or emotional abuse. Becoming a church that cares well for the abused brings together top experts from various fields to help leaders understand and implement the best practices for handling the variety of abuse scenarios in your church, school, or ministry. Check out this free video training as well as a free handbook over at newchurches.com.
You've been listening to the New Churches Podcast, brought to you by Send Network. If you like what you heard, take a few minutes to rate and review us or share this episode with a friend. It's the best way to show your support. To find more reliable resources to start your new church well, visit newchurches.com.